Hi, ladies. Welcome. I am privileged to be able to introduce Catherine Dickerson, who's going to be our speaker today. She is a recently retired licensed clinical worker, and she just retired from her private practice as well. She works generally with children under the age of 12 and families, and she helps children explore ways to explore their environment and helping parents with teaching them effective ways to communicate with their children. She resides in Solana Beach with her wonderful husband, and here she is without further ado.
Let me see if I can speak
now. You want me to use the microphone? Okay, thanks. And hopefully you'll learn some information today that will help you have the impact that you want to have. Are you going to put the three questions up?
Yes, they generally come up after you're done speaking, but if you would like them up now.
Now would be great. Thank you. Okay. Those three questions are going to be the backbone of my talk today, where I'm going to give you some answers that I've gleaned over the years and talk about how PET addresses them. As always, there will be time for questions at the end, so I'm going to ask you to save your questions. I've worked hard to pare down 25 years into 40 minutes. And if you're anything like me, you'll find the note cards on that are in front of you handy to jot down your questions. When we're all done, if you're okay with it, if you leave your questions on the table, I'll pick them up, because I'm always trying to learn more about what moms are thinking about and wondering about. And so your questions will help me to continue to be in the loop, especially now that I'm not seeing kids in private practice. Okay. So we're going to start out with, what are the five most important values you want to teach your children? This does not mean the five only values, but the five most important ones. This is probably one of the most important questions you can ask yourself as a parent. And because of that, it's unlikely that you'll just whip off the five most important ones in your whole life right now. But if you will take a moment to actually write down one, two, three, five, if you can, of the most important values that you would like to pass on to your children. You have a list of universal rational values. There are many lists of values online. This list may not have all of your values, but I think it's a great starting point to grease your wheels if you need some ideas. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to get started. So I'd like to say a little bit about what I mean by values and why we're starting with this. Ayn Rand, the novelist, came up with a very simple definition of the idea of values, and it's that which we act to gain and or keep. So our values are our guides to living. Moral values like honesty, integrity, and justice guide everything that we do. They help you decide what to tell your boss when he asks you why you've missed a meeting. They help you decide what to tell your child when she asks if there's any candy in the house, right? So those values inform everything we do. Other lifelong values like career, whether or not to get married, have children, what lifelong passions you're going to follow, plus more immediate values like how you like to dress, what's your favorite food, color, movies, music. All of those are the reasons that we get up in the morning. It's to have more of those in our life, more of what's important in our life. Knowing your key values helps you keep an eye on the big picture. So let's say your boss, who is obtuse and obnoxious anyway, just steps over the line in a meeting and you just want to put him right in his place. Keeping in mind your career and your need for a job to pay for your lovely family and your beautiful home, instead, you take a breath and look for a more opportune moment to communicate what you need to him. Okay. Keeping the big picture in mind helps you when your child is stepping on your last nerve. Instead of just reacting and yelling and criticizing them, to take a breath and give yourself a moment to calm down so you can respond in a more thoughtful manner. Okay. A really important thing to keep in mind about values, especially when you're thinking about sharing your values with your children, is that values are freely chosen. You cannot force someone to like anything. Those of you who have children who are very particular about what they eat, know that you cannot force a child to like lima beans. That was my particular issue growing up. Children who are very particular about their clothes, you can't force them to be comfortable in something that is driving them crazy. You can't force somebody to think. Nobody can tell you what should be important to you. Nobody can tell you that you should get married or who you should marry or whether you should have children or even what you should name them. All of those are just for you to decide, because basically what you're looking at, how are you going to spend your life? Okay. Now, sometimes people can be pressured into trying to hold a value and, you know, try to put up a good front. And sometimes it's dishonest, but sometimes it's very well-meaning, but their private life will tell a different story. Sometimes we get pressured or just kind of absorbed a value without thinking about it. But we find ourselves not taking the actions we need to gain or keep it. And that is a sure sign that there's something else in your mind that's more important. So your own actions tell you a lot about your values. Okay, so once you've ID'd your values, I'm hoping everybody's at least come up with one and hopefully written it down. It's important to know and helps to know how children learn and what motivates them to do the hard work of pursuing and maintaining their values. Here's a big hint. It's what you do in your day-to-day life with your children. Those are the values that they experience. In those moments when you're getting ready, in those moments when you're in the morning, in those moments when you're sitting at dinner, those times at bed, times in the park, all of those times are when your children are experiencing your values. And that's how they're learning them from you. Let me give you some examples. So I saw a three-year-old walking with his mom from his classroom to the car. Now, there's a nice wide cement path, and then there's some attractive landscaping with boulders about this big down to rocks about this big. Mom is walking along the path, and where is her son? Anybody? On the boulders, you bet. He's three. He needs challenge. So she gets to the car. She looks a little hassled. She looks at her watch. She sighs. She waits. He watches, he clambers, he gets to the car, looking very pleased with himself, climbs into this car seat, she buckles him up, and off they go. And I could just see her doing the math as she was looking at her watch. So let's see, 3 minutes of climbing versus 10 minutes of tantrum, and maybe hurting my back, wrestling him into the car seat. I'll take the 3 minutes. That was big picture parenting, right? Now, what values do you think that little boy experienced at that moment? I'm sorry. Confidence, yes. What else? Independence, yes. What else? Patience. Patience, yes, and mom experienced that too, right? And I bet he felt some pride. And I bet he felt some visibility. My mom gets me. And she sees my goodness. Okay, one more example. A mom is standing at the top, and these are all true stories. A mom is standing at the top of the stairs with her arms full of laundry. She looks down and for about the 5,000th time, sees stuff on the stairs. This is a battle she's been having with her 4-year-old son for 2 years. She's about to explode for the 1,000th time, but she took PET, so she stopped for a moment. She told me, Catherine, I heard your voice in my ear. And she said, oh no! I'm standing at the top of the stairs with my armfuls of laundry, and I see shoes on the stairs. I'm so afraid I might trip and fall. And she waits. And right when she was about to explode again, this little voice goes, got it, Mom! He comes running over, picks up the shoes, and puts them in the closet. Now, what values do you think he experienced? Or we could start with the mom, if she did not faint. Right? But what values do you think he and his mom experienced?
Teamwork,
yes. What else? I'm sorry. Responsibility, absolutely.
Empathy,
yes, on both sides. Kindness, did somebody say? Yes, uh-huh. And how about intelligence? Nobody had to tell him what to do. So there was also initiative. All of that over shoes. Okay? Mom, of course, experienced relief. Her own confidence, like, hey, this stuff really works. And she told the story with great glee. Okay. Now, how easy it would have been to insist that that little boy walk with me on the sidewalk. Can't you just see me grabbing his wrist and dragging him, right? Instead of letting him climb. How easy and understandable would have been for that mom to explode. And had I dragged that little boy to the car or his mom done that, what would he have experienced? Hurt and just like, nobody gets me. And he would have been resentful and angry. And had that mom at the top of the stairs blown up at her son, he would just feel like a crummy kid. Instead, these two children had the feeling of someone, the most important person in their lives, seeing their goodness and experiencing it then themselves. So along with that, of course, comes self-esteem. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about values. Let's take a look at what motivates young children. There are lots of different theories on this. Let's see. Some people think children are motivated to belong to the family, to the classroom, to some group. The most prevailing thought and view is that children are motivated by rewards and punishments. It's commonly thought that all people are motivated by rewards and punishments, often called consequences, right? Other people think children are motivated by fear. Other people say, no, love. Well, in 25 years of working with children and families in a wide variety of environments, from prisons to private preschools, from group homes to private homes, from slums to mansions, in the military, outside of the country, I've noticed one constant in young children. They want to be agents of action. They want to make things happen. In all of my work with infants and toddlers and preschoolers, I've only seen one that didn't have that intense drive, and she was sadly severely compromised neurologically. So it just went, okay. So think of that baby stretching to grab and put everything in her mouth, or that baby who's learning to walk. I just read some research. They fall down an average of 100 times a day. And that's across the span, so a lot more at the beginning. And they always get up, okay? That's a show of incredible drive. Just incredible drive. So what they want is to, in order to make things happen, you've got to have mastery over yourself and your environment, especially tools. Okay. Now, I want to say, a loving, respectful mom, so nice to see so many all in one room, or parent or adult, is vital in helping a child feel the safety and security to do all that exploring and experimenting. And we see on the news children playing in war zones, in mind-boggling poverty, still playing. You see pictures in National Geographic of children playing in the most appalling poverty. They're still exploring and experimenting and trying to figure out themselves and the world every waking moment. If our minds were as active as your children's minds are, your young children, Einstein would be average. They are busy. Okay. So what does it take to achieve all of this mastery? Practice. Thousands and thousands of times. as evidenced by that baby falling over 100 times a day, learning to walk. It takes practice. So how do children gain this practice and gather all this information that they're ravenous to have?
They fail.
They fail because they're trying. They're exploring and experimenting. They're gathering experiences. Now I'm going to ask you to take a moment. There's a picture of a food on everybody's table. There's one picture. If you'll hold it up and show it to everybody. And everybody, you know, kind of check, come up with a couple of details. They're very realistic pictures. A couple of details that you can gather from the pictures. So you can see color, shape. Who has the strawberries? Would you hold that up? It just shows you how size isn't always helpful. Okay, thank you. All right. Now, where it says no peeking, thank you for waiting. Please lift that up, and you'll find the real thing. So pass it around. Pass it around. Now, there's a very smelly fruit in the back that's double bagged. If the smell is too much, please let me know, or just take it outside. That's why it's by their door there. Okay, all right. So pass that around and gather some more information about it. And then when you've passed it around, will somebody please cut it open? And as you're doing that, everybody try to make believe you're a child who has never seen this. This is your first time seeing what's in here. Lots more questions and answers, eh? Lots more information. And when you think of something like a lemon or an orange, you can make juice, you can make ice cubes, you can make pops, you can make lemon meringue pie, lemon muffins. Lots and lots and lots of opportunity to experience the world. One of my favorite times when I was a Montessori teacher was on Monday. I would bring in a new fruit or a vegetable and put it in a basket. I had a toddler class. And the kids would look at it and smell it and carry it around all week. And then on Friday, we'd open it up. And they were just riveted. It was so exciting. And then, you know, everybody could have a taste. And even kids who were really, would go, you know, they'd taste it. Everybody did. It was a very, very exciting discovery. Okay, so that's what I mean by experience. The more senses you use, the more senses your child uses when he's experiencing the world, the richer is his learning. Okay, so I want to hear stories about lemon popsicles. Okay, all right. So let's look at some real life examples of experience with people and language. Okay, so Armando is 2.5. He loves to run off in the store. Mom says, Armando, come back here. She runs after him. She gets him. I told you to stay with mommy. And then she continues to shop. What was his experience? What did those words mean to him? Definitely he's driven to do what he wants to do. And at 2.5, there's not a lot of empathy. That's true. How many of your kids like to play, I'm gonna get you, and gotcha? This is the most fun game for a lot of children, and that's what Armando just played. So what he learned is, I run, you chase. That's cool. Okay? That's not what mom intended. And if she was a mom who gave him a lecture while she was shopping, all he got was, wah, 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 right? Right over his head. Okay. Amanda plays video games in the morning. When should she be getting ready for school? Her mom has other children to take to school. Every parent has other things to do besides wait for their children. And mom's bustling around, and for the fifth time, she goes, Amanda, how many times do I have to tell you? Turn that video off, get dressed, we've got to leave for school. And then she rushes off to do her stuff. What's Amanda's experience? Oh, yeah, well, oh, yeah, here it is again. What else? Yeah, but here's the thing. The meaning to her actions is Amanda can keep playing. That's what her mom just inadvertently told her. And I think she told her something else, too. I'm wondering if maybe Amanda feels not very important. Because her mom didn't connect with her in any way and didn't stay to follow through. Just, rah, and off. Understandably, just not helpfully. Okay? And that's one of the subtle ways that children can sometimes get negative messages that we don't intend to send. All right, then there's the child who refuses to eat with the family. Or refuses to eat what the family's eating. And I know I've worked with a lot of moms who just give up and feed him. Whatever he wants. Pancakes, okay. Syrup, sure. Just want to get calories in that kid. What does that child learn? The child whose mom feeds him pancakes for dinner when everyone else is having, I don't know, turkey and vegetables. What's he learning? What's his experience?
Restaurant,
yes. Short order cook, yes. I know how to get pancakes. But also, if she's feeding him, he's learning, I'm kind of helpless. I need my mom to do stuff. I don't feed myself, right? So, before PET, I had a long list of very effective solutions to these and many other problems. Lots of tips and tricks. Things like when then, you know, when you eat your dinner, then you can have dessert, which is still something that can be very effective. And all of them worked a lot of the time for a lot of families in the short run. They solved the immediate problem, but they left out one vital ingredient, the child's active mind. And this is what a focus always on consequences often leaves out. If I have to decide the consequences and I have to impose them, that's me doing all the work and I'm leaving my child out of it. So when I took PET, I learned some fabulous skills for involving the child's mind, treating each child like a full person, not just a son or a daughter, but a whole person with their own ideas, their own feelings, their own thoughts, their own interests, their own abilities, their own pace, their own values, and their own challenges in trying to obtain and maintain their values. Okay, so your children, so I'm going to talk about the first skill that we learn in PET, and that is active listening. Every child, like everybody, has problems that don't have to do with anybody else in the family. Maybe someone keeps cutting in line at school. Or maybe someone's teasing them. Or maybe their friends won't play the games they want to play. These are their problems in their lives, separate from you. And what is our knee-jerk response when a child has a problem? I know how to fix that. I'm the grown-up, been there, done that. Just do this. And we often do that without even really fully understanding what the problem is. And by the way, this is the classic complaint that wives have about husbands. Do not tell me what to do. Do not fix it. Won't you please just listen? Right? That's what children need too. In active listening, we accept the child's expression of her experience, her thoughts, her feelings. And when you can tell somebody, when you can be bold. We have ants at our house. I keep feeling like I've got one. Can you take that out of the tape? Whoops. when you have the experience of being able to be vulnerable enough to tell someone that you're weak enough to have a problem, and how you think about it and how you feel about it, and they treat you like you're normal and fine, you don't have to beat yourself up for being so stupid and weak. You don't have to defend yourself from their judgment, including the judgment that you're too stupid because I know what you should do. You can't figure it out, but I'll tell you. And with that experience, it's very calming, it's very freeing. When we do this exercise in the PET class to demonstrate it with a parent, one of the most common responses is, ah, I got to hear myself think without all the blah, blah, blah. Right? And that's what children need. And I'm always delighted and surprised at how many ideas children have. Because when you can start thinking more about your problem and talking about it to someone who will listen without trying to figure out the solution for you and giving you that time and space to think out loud, you come up with all kinds of ideas. And children come up with ideas that you would never think of. It's very fun. And what is their experience when they solve their own problem?
Empowerment.
Yeah, I'm smart. I can do it. Let me at it, world. Right? Okay. Now let's think, we've got a lot of babies here and a lot of babies coming. How exciting. So let's talk about active listening with a baby who does not have words to communicate. And it's a great example of how active listening is not just listening to the words, but listening to the body language, observing the body language, and listening to the emotional quality of the voice. So let's say you're in another room and your baby starts to cry and you hear some kind of pounding. So you go into the bedroom and you see your baby's pounding the crib, the mattress, with her feet. She's not verbalizing anything, but she's telling you a lot with her behavior. If you stop, describe what you see out loud and think out loud about what the solution might be, you're active listening. And you're sharing that process with your baby. And you're in tune with your baby because you're slow down and really looking. So, oh my goodness, I heard you crying. Gee, I wonder if you might be trying to have a BM. Seems you had one this morning, so let me feel your tummy. Oh, it feels good. Feels good. Then she stops pounding the mattress. Her hands grab your fingers. She starts to smile, and her legs kind of wave, and you go, oh, you're ready to get up. You're ready to check out the world. Okay, let's see what we can find. And then you put her on the floor with some interesting things to explore and experiment with, and you'll see how she responds. And if that's what she needed, you'll know. And if it's not, she'll tell you. And you go through that same process again. It slows you down just enough to really be in tune. And in this process of talking to your children, out thinking out loud with them, as you're problem solving, you are not an omniscient, omnipotent magician who just magically makes things happen. You're a real person who shares your process. And when you do that with your children, they're much more likely to do it with you. And then you learn the value, they experience the value of honesty and openness and acceptance and love. Whoops. Excuse me. So let me give you another example. This is very common. Mom is washing the dishes. Two-year-old Lily comes running in screaming. Mom stops. She turns, gives Lily her full attention. Clearly she has a problem. And can't understand a word Lily's saying. But she can describe what she sees. Wow, you're really angry. Lily grabs Mom and pulls at her. Mom says, you want me to come and help. So she comes. And there is Mary Lou standing at the easel. Lily points. Again, Mom describes what she sees. Oh, Mary Lou's at the easel. Lily, me paint! And you want to paint. Mary Lou, it's my turn. I was here first. You really want to take a turn. I want to get down at their level. Two girls both want the easel. And then Mom waits. Lily screams, me paint, me paint. You want to paint right now. Mom, it's not fair. She always gets what she wants. And you're afraid that if she goes first, you won't get a turn. You really want to have your turn. And she waits. Okay. Lily has now stopped screaming. She crosses her arms, scowling. Mary Lou also is crossing her arms and scowling. You can guess someone else does this in the house. Scowling. Obviously thinking. So Mom waits. But not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere till this problem's solved. Mary Lou says, all right, we can paint together. Here, Lily, you can have the red. Now, in a household where children are used to being listened to and having their needs met and they're pretty confident they'll get the turn, et cetera, that might be the end of that story. A lot of times it's not the end of the story, and I would be glad to continue the story during the Q&A if anybody's interested. Also to demonstrate this process with other issues if anybody would like. I don't want to dance with this. Okay, all right. Now sometimes your child behavior does cause you a problem. And here we've got the example of 5-year-old Jose and 4-year-old Elian wrestling in the living room. They are having a blast. They don't have a problem at all. Things are great. But Mom is worried that they're going to break a lamp or worse, hit their head on something very hard. So here she's going to use an I message that says, your specific behavior is causing this particular problem for me, and this is how I feel about not getting my need met. In this case, my need is for safety. Okay. Oh, I have to give you a caveat. These ideas that we're talking about are not for imminently dangerous situations. If your child is getting ready to run into a busy street, stick a fork into an electric socket, pick up a baby rattlesnake in the park, then you just step in and take over. Okay? We are looking at the 99.9% of other times when there's no imminent threat of loss or life or limb, of loss of life or limb. Okay? So there is a safety issue here, but it's not an imminent, fatal issue. So they're wrestling. Mom comes in. Well, she hears it, and she comes in. She looks and describes what she sees. I see you guys are having a great time wrestling. A little active listening there. And I'm worried that a lamp is going to break, or worse, one of you is going to hit your head on the furniture. And I sure would be sad about having to take anybody to the hospital. Now, a 5-year-old might come up with an agreeable 5-year-old might come up with an alternative, in which case you're done. But maybe he's so in the moment and having such a great time, he goes, but Mom, we're having fun. And then we use the third basic skill from PET, which Thomas Gordon ingloriously called Method 3, no-lose problem solving. And it's a way to be sure that everybody gets their needs met. So here Mom says, yeah, I see you're having fun, and I'm worried about the lamp, or you may be hurting yourself. So I wonder if we can think of some ways that you guys can still have fun, and I know everybody and everything is safe. Now, a 5-year-old is likely to come up with something. But let's say the 4-year-old says, we could wear our helmets. Okay, an important step here, this is a 6-step process, is that we accept all ideas at the beginning. It's like brainstorming. So we go, okay, wear helmets. I'll write that down. What else? His brother says, well, we could play outside. Okay, play outside. That's another one. The 4-year-old says, oh, go to the park. We could take it to the park. Go to the park. That's another one. Now, we don't have much time. It's great if you can go until they've thought of everything they can think of, because it's too much fun hearing all the ideas that they have. But in the interest of time, I don't have a lot of time. I've got something I need to get done. It looks to me like we might have something here that'll work for everybody. Let's take a look. Okay, we've got wear helmets. Is that okay with you? Yeah, with you? No, you don't want to wear a helmet. And it's not okay with me because things could still get broken. I'm glad it would protect your head, though. Go outside and play. Is that okay with you? Yes, you, yes, yes. Me too. We all agree on that. Go to the park. Is that okay with you? Yep. Except I don't have time to go to the park right now. So it looks like playing outside is what's going to work. Okay.
Solved.
And, of course, I'm going to check in about 10 minutes to be sure that the solution is working right, working well. But what experience do you think those children had there? Instead of me just yelling, "Stop that! You know there's no wrestling in the living room. You're going to break my lamp. You're scaring me to death. Get out of here. Go to your, go read a book." What experience did the child have if they're part of the problem-solving process? And what, cooperating, a value that they learn and learn how to cooperate. What else?
Self-esteem.
Self-esteem, big time. Yes. What else? Efficacy, they're engaged, yes. So again, who is smart?
Everybody.
Yeah, especially the kids, okay? And who of you are partial to your own ideas, right? Exactly, me too. Everybody is. Children are much more likely to follow through on an idea that they were part of coming up with. Much, much, much. One of the things that is so, I think, brilliant about PET is, remember when I told you that children want to be agents of action? They really want to be agents of action. They want to make things happen. They want to have an impact on you and on their world and on their friends. How much time do adults spend trying to prevent children from experiencing the impact of the behaviors? We pick up after them, we clean up after them, we replace or mend their broken toys, we carry their stuff, we carry them, we soothe them. The list is long. Children are working incredibly hard to experience themselves as having an impact, and adults are working really hard to keep them that experience from them. And then we wonder why they're always testing limits. Children have to test. They have to see what's acceptable and what's not. But if you give them the information rather than your directions and your conclusion without the information, then they don't have to test so much. Or they test more thoughtfully. I have some more examples, but I would like to have your examples, if you're willing, during the Q&A. So in 1 to 4 minutes, I just want to sum up. I wish I'd come across PET when I was born, right? When I look back on my years teaching and even my early years as a therapist before I knew PET, I sometimes cringe because these skills have made such a huge difference in my life. My ability to see the goodness in children and see how desperate they are to make an impact. Even if they're clumsy and obnoxious and loud and rude, they're trying to make an impact. And to see that and help them understand the impact that they're having and how they can get what they need in a more helpful way, a more constructive way, it's made a huge difference. I used to be the know-it-all, bossy big sister, and my sister used to hang up on me. Now she calls me. My mother-in-law, even after 15 years of marriage, was sure, she was very kind and very sweet to me and very polite, but I was definitely not the right woman for her husband. Her son, excuse me. Definitely not the right woman but not the right woman for her son until I took PET. And because I was able to deal with her with these skills, which was drastically different from the way I was raised, but there was a time when there was a family brouhaha, and she reached out and she grabbed me and she said, "Oh, you'll understand, I know you will." And I acted listening, she said, "I knew it, you understand." I was suddenly a good daughter-in-law, which was fun. So PET has had a huge impact on me. It had a huge impact on my work. It's had a huge impact on parents all over the world and people all over the world. So I hope that you look into it. The website is posted on one of your handouts, gordontraining.com. And I would love to see you in the January class. Unfortunately, I was not able to get the dates confirmed by today, hopefully by next week. And I will let Lauren know so she can let you all know. There's an interest list on your sheet that if you would like to be on my information list for PET, it's not very active, but you'll hear about any classes that are coming up. But it won't be very pesky. Put your name and your email address. It's great if I know your children's ages and names, but your name and email address is important. So if you would like to get more information from me, go ahead and put your name on that. But whatever parenting approach or ideas you want to use that will fit your values and work for your life, I wish you many happy years of finding and seeing the goodness in your children and sharing your goodness with them. So thank you very much. If anybody has more questions about that sibling issue, questions about emotions, or if you would like to share one of the challenges that you're dealing with right now and see if PET skills might be relevant, I'd be glad to answer. Yes, just you have to talk really loud. Yes, so you're asking how to help a child get into bed the first time you ask, and how to help your husband be calamer the 10th time you have to ask. Am I? Okay. All right. Well, so what I'm wondering is, what is your child's experience the first time you ask? What do those words actually in real life mean to him? So what's happening when you're asking him? And I guarantee there's lots of people here who are having the same experience.
So my daughter is just 21 months younger. So normally, like, everyone's winding down, and I'll say, okay, guys, let's go get ready for bed. And my son has asthma, so he'll give himself his little Q-var, and then I'll say, okay, do your Q-var, brush your teeth, pee-pee in the potty, put your jammies on, I'll meet you in your bed. And then I kind of do the same thing with my daughter, go see her, and then I'll go to his room. But most of the time, she'll do it, and then I'll be expecting him to be in his room waiting for me, and he'll be, like, somewhere else, climbing on something, buildings, you know, just anything that's hysterical. And my problem is I kind of think it's funny too a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. So you give him a list of directions and then send him off to follow through. And I'm going to put you a little on the spot here. Even though he never does them, you're still expecting he will. Sound familiar to anybody? Yes. Okay. So let's look at how you could create an experience that's clearer for him and that supports his active mind. Okay? So you're playing, and what's his name again?
Tanner.
You're having fun with your Legos. Ooh, that's a cool building there. Yeah. Okay. It's 7:30. And bedtime is 8. 7:30 and bedtime is 8. I've described what I saw. I've connected with her interest. Now I'm giving a reminder. I'm don't know if he reads the clock yet. No. And even if he does, he's probably not watching it. He's being masterful. Yeah. He's busy. Okay. And I want to respect that he's busy. Okay. That's a cool building. It's 7:30. And bedtime is 8 o'clock. We've got 30 minutes till bedtime.
Okay, can I finish my Legos?
You want to finish your Legos. Okay. And you've got 30 minutes till bedtime.
Okay.
Now, I've just treated him with a lot of respect. If this is the first time, we've got a lot more work to do. But over time, that'll be enough. Unless the Legos are so imperative. How many here read books at night with flashlights under the covers? Right? I didn't care what bedtime it was, all right? Children have those passions, and then, you know, they need help. But once he's got experience, just that reminder can be enough. And I'm so respectful. He doesn't have to be defensive. He doesn't have to say, she never lets me do anything, you know, right? He can just play, all right. So how long does it take him to brush his teeth, put on his pajamas, and get into bed?
If he's doing it, like 3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes. So we've given him a 30-minute warning. He does have time to play, right? Okay, now am I going to come back at 8 o'clock and say, why are you not in bed? No. I'm going to come back in 15 minutes. Wow. Looks like you still got a lot of Legos to put on there.
Yes.
And I want to get down. Yeah. We've got 15 minutes till bedtime. I'm wondering if there's going to be time to do all of this.
I hope so.
Yeah. So you want to finish your Legos, and I need you guys to be in bed by 8 so I can get some of my work done tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Mommy, I'll do it.
That happens.
Up a little bit and like do all my other stuff, the Uno and the books earlier, and so that I give him a little bit more warning so he can have more control of his pre-bed activities.
Yes.
Okay.
Control over your own life is key to mastery. Everybody wants that. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have a question or yes?
So I have an almost 2-year-old and an almost 5-year-old, or sorry, 5-month-old. So they're 18 months apart. They're both under 2. And so it's hard to communicate, I feel, effectively with young children like that. My almost 2-year-old, she's very smart. So a lot of the times when I'll tell her, you know, eat your food, eat your dinner, and then you can have cookies. Well, then no cookies, because I don't want to eat it. Eat your dinner, and then you can have your cookies. And she's like, well, then I don't want cookies, basically. And I guess my biggest problem with her right now is when I'm taking care of the baby, like nursing or changing diapers, she will come over and try to kick or hit, like grab my shirt and pull on my clothes and hang all over me. And I'm like, don't do that, baby, because you're going to, you know, I'm taking care of your brother. Please don't hit, don't kick. Be nice. Be nice with your hands.
Thank you. That's actually one of the examples I wasn't sure I'd have time for, so thanks for bringing it up. All right. How many of you have read Siblings Without Rivalry by Adele Faber and Maslisch? I highly recommend that book. It's a really helpful book. One of the things that helps you do is see that it's not really that much fun being a big sister or a big brother when you were the only child. This is not a present, right? It's a big adjustment. So, what is she telling you? Am I right that it's your daughter? When she's hitting and kicking you when you're holding the baby, what is she telling you? That she wants your attention. Yeah, she misses you. She doesn't have enough time with you. So how can we let her know that we understand that? With little children, just like with the baby, you're mostly reading, or like little Lily, you're reading their body language. And they're telling you a lot. If you slow down and really look, you will be surprised at how much they're telling you. So you say to her when she kicks you, ouch, that hurts when you kick me. You're kind of mad that I'm spending all this time with the baby. Maybe she just scowls. Maybe she just says, I want mommy's lap or something like that. How about, you know, you be her, okay. Ouch, that hurts when you kick me. Boy, you don't like it when I spend all this time with the baby.
She runs away and goes, ha, 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 and then comes back and hits me again.
All right, so she runs away. What is she telling you when she runs away? How much more time? Maybe play with me, maybe. What else might she be telling you? That's a real possibility. I'm not sure how this is going to go. I'm not sure I'm brave enough to really tell my mom how I feel. It's another possibility. How will you know? You're going to watch, okay? So she runs away laughing. Sometimes children laugh because they're nervous. Anybody else ever had that experience? Right. Children do that. Sometimes they'll do something very naughty. And they know it's not that you're not going to like it, but they laugh because they're nervous. Okay. So she runs away laughing. She comes back. She kicks you again, and I say, ouch, boy, you really want me to know that you want me to spend some time with you.
Oh, She just does it again. She just continues to do it until I get angry.
What? I'm sorry, what does she do?
She just continues to, like, grab on me and hit and kick. And
now, here's the thing. If you haven't fully acknowledged her, she's going to keep telling you. But when you fully acknowledge and accept what a child is trying to tell you, without telling them to stop or don't or anything, just say, boy, you really don't like that I'm spending all this. You want me to spend some time with you. A lot of times they'll go, yeah, time with mommy. And that's a unique experience for a lot of people, to really be accepted and understood. Oh, absolutely at two. Absolutely at two. I'll tell you a quick two-year-old story. But I want to finish up. So you acknowledge, and then you say, well, you know what? I need to finish feeding the baby, and then let's see something that you and I can do together. Okay? Because I miss spending time with you, too. Oh. And I want to give a quick example of a two-year-old, a little girl who, I was seeing her son, and she had a reputation for running the family with her intense, demanding screams. And she escaped from her mom in the waiting room, came running into my office with kind of a wild and determined look, and I had heard about her. And I didn't have time. So I said, oh, you've wanted to see what's in this office. What's in this playroom? She looked at me. She makes a beeline for this shelf. I get down, spread my arms out just to slow her down. You see some toys you'd like to play with, and I have to put them all away now because I have some work that I have to do. She looks at me. She kind of inches over. I kind of inch over. And I say, you really want to play with some toys. And I have to put them all away because I have work that I have to do right now. Then I stand up. I'm going to try to inch her toward the door. She grabs her stuff bare, puts them under her arm, and she marches out to her mother. And her brother, who was standing in the door, goes, how did you do that? He was shocked. She was two. But I really heard her, I accepted her, and she still didn't get what she wanted. But she got empathy, she got understanding, she got respect, and she got independence. Nobody told her what to do. She decided to leave the room. Okay? So yes, it really worked, and it works with babies wonderfully. Somebody else had raised a hand? I think we've got time for one more.
I do know that we have a few more questions left. I am going to have to cut us. I'm over here.
Oh, sorry.
But Catherine will be here. So for those of you who do have questions, please, please, please find her. She will be here for the next few minutes.
I'm happy to stay for as long as anybody wants to information.
So if there are more questions, please seek her out. Maybe we'll say she'll be over in this corner, yonder. For those of you who do have some more questions about behaviors, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much.
So much for your time and sharing your gifts with us, and hopefully we can all go home and parent more calmly.
It has been very much my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.